Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. In Open the Story of Human Progress, Swedish writer and economist Johan Norberg presents a wide-ranging work of popular history, political economy, and political psychology. Its central claim is that human flourishing has depended less on any single civilization's inherent superiority than on openness, the ability of people, goods, ideas, and knowledge to circulate across social and political boundaries. Norberg surveys episodes of intellectual and commercial dynamism in settings including the ancient Mediterranean, the Abbasid world, Song China, and early modern Europe, while also examining periods in which fear, repression, or isolation interrupted such development. The book is simultaneously explanatory and argumentative. It seeks to account for the recurring appeal of closed societies by linking it to in-group loyalties, threat sensitivity, and authoritarian reactions to perceived disorder. It also makes a contemporary defense of liberal institutions, pluralism, international exchange, and innovation. Rather than offering a neutral chronology of economic development, Open advances a clear interpretive thesis: progress is fragile because the social conditions that enable experimentation and cooperation are politically difficult to sustain. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, openness is defined as exchange across economic, intellectual, and social borders. Norberg uses openness in a deliberately broad sense. Free trade matters in his account, but it is only one expression of a more general condition. People must be able to encounter unfamiliar goods, techniques, arguments, and ways of life. An open society, therefore, permits commercial exchange, migration, intellectual dissent, cultural contact, and competition among ideas. This definition gives the book a wider scope than a conventional defense of laissez-faire economics. It connects prosperity to the circulation of knowledge as well as to the movement of commodities. The underlying mechanism is cumulative learning. No community possesses all useful knowledge internally, and innovation often arises when existing practices are tested against foreign alternatives or combined with them. Trade can transmit technologies and skills. Pluralism can protect unpopular hypotheses long enough for them to be evaluated. Institutional competition can make it harder for a single authority to permanently suppress experimentation. Norberg argues that these processes explain why periods of dynamism have appeared in very different religious and cultural settings. This framing also supports his rejection of cultural essentialism. The book does not treat modern prosperity as the inevitable outcome of a uniquely Western character. Instead, it emphasizes recurring institutional patterns, tolerance of difference, exchange with outsiders, and room for independent initiative. The implication is demanding. Openness is not a passive absence of borders. It requires norms and institutions capable of managing disagreement without converting it into exclusion or coercion. Secondly, a comparative history challenges civilizational explanations of progress. A distinctive feature of Open is its comparative historical range. Norberg points to earlier eras of commercial, scientific, and cultural achievement beyond modern Western Europe, including ancient Greece, the Abbasid Caliphate, Song China, and Italian city-states. These examples are not intended to claim that their institutions were fully liberal by modern standards. Rather, they show that significant advances have repeatedly emerged where exchange, urban networks, relative pluralism, and intellectual curiosity were given unusual scope. This comparison serves an argumentative purpose. Accounts of development sometimes attribute success primarily to a particular religion, ethnicity, national temperament, or inherited cultural disposition. Norberg instead asks what flourishing periods had in common, despite their divergent traditions. His answer is that each opened channels through which ideas and people could move, compete, and collaborate. The comparison makes openness a variable that can appear, disappear, and reappear across societies, rather than a permanent possession of one region. The book also stresses reversibility. Historical openings did not automatically generate continuous progress. Political conquest, censorship, restrictions on contact, and concentrated power could narrow the space for innovation. The contrast between growth and retreat reinforces Norberg's central point that progress is contingent. Readers should nevertheless recognize the limits of this sweeping method. Broad comparisons can illuminate recurring patterns, but they cannot fully resolve the complex local causes behind every historical transformation. The book favors a strong unifying interpretation over exhaustive case-by-case institutional analysis. Thirdly, fear, in-group loyalty, and authoritarianism help explain resistance to open societies. Norberg does not assume that evidence of material gains will make openness politically secure. A major part of his argument concerns the psychological tension between the advantages of broad cooperation and the human desire for belonging, predictability, and group cohesion. Openness exposes people to difference and disruption, unfamiliar neighbors, new competitors, changing occupations, and challenges to settled beliefs. Even when such change expands opportunities overall, its costs can be immediate, visible, and emotionally potent. drawing in part on work in political psychology. Including Karen Stenner's discussion of authoritarian predispositions, Norberg argues that perceived threat can intensify demands for uniformity and control. Under conditions of insecurity, people may become more hostile to dissent, diversity, and outsiders, and more willing to accept government actions that weaken liberal safeguards. This is not presented simply as an individual moral failing. It is a recurrent political vulnerability that leaders and movements can activate by portraying complexity as danger. The analysis helps explain why closed policies can attract support even in societies that have benefited from exchange. Losses and risks tend to command more attention than diffuse, long-run gains. Norberg's practical implication is that defenders of open institutions must take insecurity seriously rather than merely repeat aggregate economic statistics. A society that cannot preserve trust, legal restraint, and peaceful disagreement may respond to uncertainty by sacrificing the very freedoms that made adaptation and prosperity possible. Fourthly, the Great Enrichment is treated as an institutional achievement rather than a Western miracle. Open places modern economic growth within a longer history of earlier, temporary golden ages. Norberg's point is not that previous civilizations lacked achievement. Many produced major advances in philosophy, engineering, commerce, and science. The distinctive feature of the modern era is the scale and durability of its rise in productivity, life expectancy, technological capacity, and living standards. He associates this transformation with an unusually sustained expansion of institutions that allowed knowledge, capital, goods, and people to connect across boundaries. This interpretation resists triumphalist stories in which the Great Enrichment follows automatically from Western identity. Western Europe, in Norberg's telling, became exceptionally productive because particular conditions of openness took hold there and were then amplified by wider networks of commerce, inquiry, and institutional competition. Those conditions can be found in partial form elsewhere, and their benefits are not confined to their place of origin. The relevant question is therefore not which civilization is inherently destined to lead, but which rules allow discovery and cooperation to continue. The argument has a policy edge. If prosperity rests on institutions rather than cultural destiny, it can be lost through choices that obstruct entry, trade, free expression, or outside contact. At the same time, this is a deliberately liberal reading of development. Critics may find that it gives insufficient weight to state capacity, public goods, or the ways governments have sometimes supported infrastructure, education, and scientific systems. The book's contribution lies in forcefully foregrounding openness as a necessary enabling condition, even where it does not settle every causal question about growth. Lastly, the book links historical openness to today's conflict over globalization and liberal institutions. Although structured around history, Open is clearly addressed to contemporary arguments about nationalism, populism, immigration, trade, and globalization. Norberg treats these debates as a renewed contest between open and closed social orders, rather than as a simple replay of older ideological divisions. His concern is that democratic societies can retain formal elections while becoming less tolerant of dissent, less welcoming of exchange, and more prepared to use state power to impose cultural or economic protection. The book's defense of openness is not limited to the claim that international exchange raises output. It argues that an open order protects the discovery process itself. Entrepreneurs can introduce unfamiliar products, researchers can challenge received views, minorities can participate in public life, and citizens can learn from practices developed elsewhere. Restricting these channels may offer an appearance of control, but it also reduces a society's capacity to correct errors and respond creatively to new problems. Norberg recognizes that openness involves disruption, which is why it remains politically contested, yet his answer is principally institutional and civic-defend rule-bound liberalism, freedom of speech, pluralism, and economic exchange rather than treating fear as a reason to retreat from them. This makes the book more polemical than a detached survey of global history. It asks readers to see contemporary closure not as a harmless preference for local identity, but as a potential threat to the social ecology of innovation and peaceful cooperation. Its argument is strongest as a warning about long-term institutional erosion. Though readers seeking detailed prescriptions for distributional harms may want supplementary analysis. In conclusion, Open: The Story of Human Progress will be most useful to general readers of economic history, globalization, liberal political thought, and the psychology of political conflict. It is particularly well-suited to readers who want a readable cross-cultural case against the idea that prosperity belongs naturally to one people or civilization. Norberg offers an accessible framework for connecting historical episodes that are often studied separately: commercial networks, intellectual pluralism, migration, technological diffusion, and the political backlash that can accompany social change. Its chief intellectual benefit is conceptual clarity. By treating openness as the movement of ideas and people as well as goods, the book gives readers a way to assess institutions beyond narrow measures of trade policy. It also emphasizes that progress is not self-sustaining. Societies can become more prosperous while remaining vulnerable to fear, intolerance, and demands for enforced unity. That perspective is valuable for interpreting current debates, without assuming that economic gains alone will settle them. Compared with more specialized histories of capitalism or development, Open stands out for combining broad historical comparison with an explicit account of why openness is psychologically and politically unpopular. Its limitation follows from the same strength the argument is unapologetically normative and often compresses complicated historical causation into a single dominant theme. Readers looking for a balanced treatment should pair it with work on state capacity, inequality, and public institutions. Even so, Norberg's sustained focus on the fragile institutional foundations of exchange and inquiry makes this a distinctive, provocative defense of an open society. If you would like to support Johan Norberg, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.